Hi, and welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Yudalee Wickham Ashby. And today I continue my conversation with Harrow Holloway, the president of Barnard, a young man who is visually impaired. And today we'll talk about living with vision loss and some of the exciting things we have done and will be doing. So welcome back, Harrow.
Thank you. Thank you, Lee. Thank you for having me.
So, Harrow, just before our program, we were talking about Helen Keller and, you know, persons who are living with deaf blindness and your exploration of this subject matter. Now, you and I are visually impaired, and I want you to share a little what it has been like, what your experience has been like living with vision loss from childhood into adulthood.
Now, I would say that now I'm 53 years old, so I don't mind throwing that out there. Still a young man. I would say my experience as a person living with vision loss has slowly gone from one, I would say one experience to the other. And that as I grew, the experiences seemed to differ quite a bit. I would say in the early days, in the early 1970s, early 80s, I felt very out of place in that because I'm visually impaired in one eye, I'm blind in the other, and I used to wear very thick glasses. It always seemed to be the center of attention. As a young boy, you know, you don't want to feel that you stand out for something negative. You want to stand up for something positive. But I'm good at sports, I'm good at academics. But when you stand up, because as the Beijing say, you got one eye shut down, you know, it always felt like I stood out. I was different. But as it grew, it kind of became not so much of a big thing. And I would say in the 2000s, late 90s, 2000s to now, it doesn't seem like it mattered that much to people in that no one really asks anything about, oh, why you have one eye shut down, you know? So I would say my experience, it seemed that my circumstance has become a bit more familiar and therefore maybe a bit more acceptable by the general public and the culture of Barbados. When I first started out, I had enough vision that I didn't have to use a cane. But now I do. And all of those persons who are listening that had to go to the transition of not using the cane to having to use the cane daily, it's a difficult transition because, you know, it makes you feel a lot more visible than you would like. And it makes you feel a lot less capable than you would like. And that is the initial thinking of most people. But in reality, when you start using it, then you come to the conclusion that this makes life so much easier. But you have to get to that point. And go ahead. You're going to ask a question.
Oh, yes, because I too would have had a similar experience in terms of growing up with limited vision in the night because I have retinitis pigmentosa, which usually starts with vision loss in the night. But the vision throughout the day is extremely good. And I knew people felt that I was playing tricks on them because here I am walking around during the day, no cane, unaided. But at night, I was blind as a bat. So, you know, then, as you said, as you grew older and the vision loss worsened, then I had to transition into using a cane. And it almost cost me my life. for me to make that mental shift into using the white cane. So I perfectly understand what you're talking about. And as you correctly said, the whole visibility, you're because now all eyes are on you using this white cane. But I believe very strongly that our advocacy over the years have helped the Barbadian public to appreciate and understand what we experience as persons living with vision loss or any other type of disability. And I'm very grateful to our society, those individuals in the general public who listen to this radio program and other radio programs, who come out to lectures, public meetings, so that they're learning all the while and helping to move into a new level of understanding around disability and appreciate us. We really appreciate you, the general public. So thank you very much for your understanding and support.
I'll give you a little story. Recently, I had the opportunity to walk Worthing Main Road, and I don't walk busy streets very often. And so I was with a friend who is not visually impaired, and we had to cross the street a couple times. And I can tell you, you know, they said, "Oh, this traffic can stop." I said, "Man, once I put up my cane, traffic immediately stops." And, you know, I put up my cane confidently and I step in the road, and they said, "Oh, well, how you know that they're going to stop?" I said, "Man, this cane has a lot more power than, you know, than we, the persons in the disabled community, realize." And as you said, it is through advocacy that these things happen. And so let me thank those persons who would have saw me on Worthing Main Road and stopped and allowed me to cross both, you know, both times. It's a busy place for visually impaired persons to travel. And crossing the street, even for persons who don't have visually impairment in these days, you know, you know the difficulty that people don't want to stop. So I would tell the general public sometimes, if you're walking with a person who is visually impaired and they have a white cane, then it may even make it much easier for you to cross the road.
No, Pero, I have to share a very hilarious story. And it really demonstrates how much our society is watching us and caring for us. Now, recently, I was walking in Bridgetown with someone who also has a physical disability. So his disability is noticeable because it's in the legs. But he was guiding me, and I had my cane folded. It was an outstretched. So there we were walking, going along this busy street. And there were two persons behind us. And I could hear the lady saying to the gentleman, "But she should really put him on the inside and not have him at the edge of the pavement." So we continued walking. And I think they got so concerned that they actually came and stopped us and said to me, "Excuse me, lady, I think you should really put him on the inside, you know, so that he's away from traffic." So when I told them that I'm the one who is visually impaired and he was leading me, oh, it was so funny. I thank them for their real expression of care, you know, because many times we see situations and we don't get involved. We ignore and don't say anything. So I really appreciate those two persons who demonstrated that level of care for both of us.
It's true. Now, you did ask a question about my exploration of Helen Keller.
Yes.
Now, deaf blindness to me feels like a very dark existence, in that I am visually impaired and I feel the frustration of, you know, sometimes you want to see, and, you know, it's something that feels like a struggle, especially in unfamiliar places. And then I cannot imagine adding deafness to that. So I believe that these persons have a unique story to tell. And for someone like Helen Keller, who at a time in the early 1900s, not even like 2023, it must have been a tremendous road to walk to navigate in those times when so many things were not available, but still, in an extreme disability like deaf, being deaf and blind, I consider anybody who would have beat the odds and become so famous and recognizable because of their efforts. I think it is truly remarkable. And deaf blindness is not something that, I mean, I'm the president of Barnard, and we don't have any persons who are deaf blind in our organization, and I have not met any personally yet. So it is an area of the disabled community that I don't think is very well known. We don't
No.
explore that side of disability too often.
No, we don't see many individuals because it is a difficult space to navigate. I remember meeting a deaf blind man in Trinidad many years ago when I attended a conference, and we were able to communicate by him signing in the palm of my hand. Now, technology has afforded individuals who are both blind and deaf to use Braille as a way of communication. Once that individual learns Braille, they can, navigate the space of communication through Braille. They can also have, and they usually do have, an assistant who will type, and then it can be transcribed into Braille or just continued in the regular text, and speech can be used for those who may have some measure of hearing. Because when we say deaf, it doesn't mean that the person is, that all the
Totally.
persons are profoundly deaf, that they cannot hear any sound, So depending on the degree of deafness or hard of hearing, they still may be able to hear the transcription of what is typed. But most persons tend to use the Braille as a way of reading and communicating in that difficult space. I am trying to remember the
It's
young lady who I recently would have read about and listened to from the US, who is deaf blind, and she trained as a lawyer, practiced law for a couple of years, and then went into public speaking. She became a national speaker. So right now she travels the world speaking to businessmen and, all types of publics to really promote and advocate on behalf of persons who are disabled, particularly those who are deafblind.
the first deafblind lawyer who graduated from Harvard. The name
Yes.
slips me now, but I'm sure the listening public will be getting on their phones and computers and researching who is this lady that Yulia and Piero are talking about. She has a remarkable story, and I think just like Helen Keller, she is blazing the trail for those persons with this unique disability.
And Pero, I remember when I watched some of her videos, she was very active, had a very active social life. And this is an area too that many persons with disabilities in Barbados find real hardship in being able to do, like to just go out for dinner, to go out for lunch, or to go kayaking, or jet skiing and things like that. What has your experience been like in being able to get involved in some of these activities?
I think you're correct when you said it's a hard space to navigate. And the young lady that we spoke of, the young lawyer, she goes skiing. And I mean, I can't imagine skiing, and I'm visually impaired, and I cannot imagine her skiing as a person who is deaf blind. And there are videos on YouTube of her doing these, what we would consider to be extreme sports. Now, I think in Barbados, we have not gotten there yet in terms of the general public seeing me turn up at a water sports place with my cane and, say, hey, I want to go on the sea. And, you get all kind of reactions. Can you swim? No. Have you ever gone doing this before? No. Well, boy, I don't know what to tell you. Even one guy said, well, you're going to be doing it at your own risk. But, and they seem really rough. So, from the time they saw me, it was like, what confusion is this coming to me now this afternoon? And I think that it's just a case where the fear of
Yes.
you injuring yourself. I mean, I'm a pretty big, strong, capable man. I believe that I can handle myself, even though this is something that I never done before, But I think that we must, as disabled persons, continue to step off the edge into those things that are not very familiar to us and not very familiar to the persons who we are going to and say, hey, I want to try this. Because I think that's the way that progress is made. You have to have persons who are willing to venture and say, I want to do this. And I want you to assist me in doing this because I think both persons benefit from the experience. And the next person that comes after me, comes after you that want to do your running and so on. Oh, well, somebody came to us last time and we did it. And this is how we think we should do it. We are willing to accommodate, but somebody has to be first.
Oh, definitely. Peril, as you spoke about the fear that most instructors have, that is so real. I remember going on a retreat with my colleagues from work, and we were kayaking as well as hiking. And I remember the instructor, and I could physically feel his fear in allowing me to participate with these two events. The others were doing it as teams, where a team would get into the kayak and they would roar and go. But when it came to me, there was that level of fear. And I must appreciate and applaud my colleagues because they stood up and said, no, she has to participate as well. So it ended up that he was the one then to take me out on the kayak as an individual. So I missed that experience of being part of a team doing the kayaking, but it still was a very good experience to actually kayak. And then later now, the area that we were going to traverse with the hike was there was a slippery area. There was also a very steep area to traverse. And again, the level of fear that overcame the instructor was like, wow. And I said to him, but well, I'm accustomed to hiking, so I am game for it. Again, my colleagues rallied around me and they were there. And the funny thing about it, Peril, is I achieved that hike. I completed it without any incident or accident. But one or two of my other colleagues stopped, they did not complete the journey, and one or two slipped, But I'm saying, give us the opportunity to really experience some of these social fabrics within our society. If we want to jet ski, let us do that. And I will share a secret with you, so don't let it out. Don't let it out. Please don't let it out. I will be participating in the Run Barbados series, the 5K run on December 7th. And I have to tip my hat off to my runner. So those of you who want to see me actually physically run, you can come out and see my guide and myself running.
But I'm sure the listening public will be there if they only come to see this visually impaired person, run. I think at the end of the day, we also have to give our hats off to the Paralympians,
Oh, yes.
because they actively do those extreme sports, and they do it to the same ability as those who don't have disabilities. And it is really challenging yourself, because you can imagine that a person who has one leg, who say he wants to cycle, or a totally blind person who wants to become a swimmer, you would always get persons who will tell you, well, I don't think you should do that. There's more than enough people that will give you enough reasons not to, and very few who will tell you to do. And that is the odds that you are fighting against. The encouragement will have to come from yourself and those few individuals who believe, well, yeah, let us do this.
Definitely. And we also have to salute those individuals who come alongside us and give us the necessary support. You know, it takes quite a lot to participate in sports or other social events. It means transport has to be factored in. It also means that your preparation has to be factored in, where you may need extra nutrients, you may need a track to run on, you may need a surface to play goal ball or badminton, and you need the coaches to work with you so that you can really come up to Paralympic level and qualify. So yes, we have to tip our hats off to those individuals who really work with us and come alongside, so that we are standing together as Barbadians, demonstrating this is our island and we have the right to be involved, to participate, and to truly enjoy all that is here on our island.
Indeed.
So, Pero, any challenges that you are taking up?
Well, I do want to do the kayaking. I said to myself, well, I went as far as the beach, so I cannot now go back and not do it,
Okay.
because once you make the attempt, the seed has been sown, and therefore there's no other direction to go but forward. So I think, well, at some point in time, I'll come back and tell you my experience and let you know, I'll find out if my experience was the same as yours. I do have a fear to see, but I'm willing to conquer that fear. And I think it will be a good additional to my personal growth.
Oh, definitely. Recently, I attended a judo exhibition and discussion around judo for persons who are blind and visually impaired. The Japanese embassy here in Barbados invited two Japanese men, one a Paralympian, he's visually impaired, and he won a gold medal in judo, and father of a daughter with Down syndrome, and he also won a gold medal in the Olympics in judo for Japan. And they both shared their experiences in being judo experts. Both the dad, he, Mr. Suzuki, he teaches judo to children, and he has deliberately included children with disabilities, because they are using judo as a form of inclusion, one of those inclusionary measures, so that individuals with disabilities can learn alongside the individuals without disabilities. And it's a skill that can be used as a self-defense method as well, you know, particularly for women with disabilities.
Outstanding.
It is. And, you know, I think that as we continue to have various conversations across these different spaces, that sports need to be explored a bit more so that more people with disabilities on the island can get involved, because it's very useful to continuing our health growth, you know, so that we continue to be well and have that feeling of wellness, both mentally and physically.
I think it is also an avenue to help with that mental balance, because most of us in the disabled community, you know, we preoccupy ourselves, understandably so, with the challenges of day-to-day life. You know, I sit here and I think about how I'm going to pay my bills. I live off a disability pension, I live off of welfare, or woe is me. And you sit in your home and you ponder on these things, or you try to figure out, how will I make ends meet? Not saying that those things aren't necessary things, but if you have an additional avenue where you have a positive and healthy distraction, then that helps to take your mind off the woes and do something that gives you that little boost, that little confidence, that little positiveness that we all need as disabled persons. And maybe sports is one of those avenues that we in the disabled community can explore to help bring that aspect to our daily lives.
It definitely is, because as you correctly said, it allows that positive feeling to be experienced more and more as you challenge yourself to, you know, develop your skill, whether it is in badminton, judo, chess, you name the sport, you can develop that skill and compete. So that's another level you can go to, or you can just do it for the fun of it. And by having that positive feeling, that confidence of being able to achieve this, to accomplish this goal, then it helps you to view your woes in a different perspective. So you can start thinking of, okay, so I have the challenge of not having enough income to pay my bills. How do I manage this? How can I reach out to another social service agency so that I'm able to level it out and still be comfortable and not worry about this? And I think also another area that isn't often discussed in a public way is, you know, parents who have children with moderate to severe disabilities. What will happen to my child or children when I pass, you know? And if there are no other siblings that may offer to care for them, where do they go? What happens to their life? What quality of life will they really have after I pass? And maybe not even having the finance to leave, you know, a plan in place to sustain them until death.
This is a challenging topic. And I dare say that one that I don't have an adequate answer to, because I don't think that the infrastructure, the environment, the facility and the services are in place. We're hoping that we get there where parents can be confident that, you know, the natural course of life, they will die and leave their children with disabilities, that they'll be well taken care of. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the next step in the fight for equality and the advancement of persons with disabilities. What do parents do with their children who will become adults? It is a challenging situation. And I think parents in Barbados and the region and globally are now being heard. Our autism and the autism fight has brought some significant light to this topic, and that will, span out into the other disabilities. I mean, children with Down Syndrome Association now are really pushing this fight. And it is a little different in that we, the disabled, me, you, are advocating for ourselves and an extension of the environment. These are parents who don't have disabilities now fighting for their children who have disabilities. So it's a little different perspective, in that they now have to plant that seed in the general public and in the government and so on, that, hey, I am speaking for my child who you can't hear them speak for themselves. And therefore, I am transferring the experience of my child and the concern of me as a parent and trying to make you understand this is what I need to happen now and for the future. And I think it is being done, but it is happening a bit slower because the frontier of this is a little bit new to many.
Indeed, it is. Well, Pero, on that note, I have to say we need to wrap it up again, but it really has been wonderful chatting with you and allowing greater insights into living with vision loss, living with a disability in Barbados. So I say thank you again, and we'll chat again.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Remember, you can play your part by giving support to persons living with disabilities in Barbados. So champion our cause as well. You have been listening to Visions. You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudeli Wickham Ashby, and my special guest, Pero Holloway, President of Barnard. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300. You can also email me at visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And you can listen to this and past episodes by going to the VOB 929.com website. So until next week, I say thank you. Love yourself a little extra this day, and love your neighbors even a little more today. So until next week, ciao.